Speak, O Lord, your servants heareth. Amen. Please be seated. Well, the announcement of what the sermon would be was a little cryptic. I realize that, but I made it cryptic on purpose because I want us to think about something that's very difficult in our time, in our place, very difficult to think about what is going on in our country, what is going on in our churches, what is going on generally. And I'd like us to consider one thing especially. First, it's a story. A true story. I have to stop. I have lots of stories to tell, and in one congregation that I served many years ago, they were convinced that I was making the stories up. They said nobody can have stories like that unless they made them up. I said, no, they're all true, and this one is true as well. This is a true story. It starts with shouts of joy. Morfar, Morfar, Morfar! Two blonde kids running through the airport parking lot. They come running up and they see this man standing waiting, and they grab him around the ankles and legs and they hold on to him and they will not let go. No matter what was done, they would not let go. They were shouting, Morfar. Does anybody, we don't have any Swedes here today, do we? Morfar. Morfar is a Swedish word. And it is, the English version of it is mother's father. Among the Scandinavians, we identify, and in Russia too, perhaps, Ukraine, maybe not, but you know Swede. So that there's a recognition that when we talk about our relatives have relationships. And so in this case, Morfar is mother's father. I was the father, my lovely daughter was the mother, and the little children, of course, then were Morfar, they were something. I had to leave the Swedish church because I could never keep all those things straight. If you've ever been around Swedes, you know that they've got everything all lined up among family members, and you have to try and keep that all straight. Well, in this case, the kids were so excited. Who could stop them from wanting to hug their grandfather? I was the grandfather, I think you guessed. And these two little boys were my grandchildren. At roughly the same time, a van of children, not very far away, a van of children were crying out this. Madre, madre, padre, padre. And they were crying. What's the difference between these two sets of children? One, the children crying out, Morfar, Morfar, were being united with their family member. It was a lovely scene of reunification and joy as grandfather and grandchildren were reunited. But what about the other set of children? What were they crying out? They were not crying Morfar, Morfar, but they rather Madre, Padre. They were crying out for their mothers and fathers. They were inconsolable. People outside the van picked up rocks and stones and hurled them at the children in the van. They were hurling these rocks and stones, hoping to break a window and hit a kid. Their joy was found in hate. The children had no idea if they would ever see their parents again. We have been told over the past 6-8 months that the problem has been solved, but every single person who works in this field and has expertise in this field says it is simply not true. That in fact, that most of the children who were taken from their parents have still not been returned to their parents. And the children are, as I say, inconsolable. They lost their parents. Why is it that one set of family members is privileged and the other set of family members is punished? What had the little blonde boys done to be so privileged? What had the Spanish-speaking children done to be so punished by destroying their families? And so this is the question that gets raised. What is happening to our country? Now, I'm going to do something I've never done before in a sermon, because I like to keep sermons focused on the text. But I've been so distraught this week thinking of my own children. That could be my child crying inconsolably. There was an article in the Boston Globe this past week. As I say, I never quote secular sources, shouldn't, or not always quote secular sources in my sermons. But in this case, the writer of the op-ed piece for the Boston Globe wrote to me one of the most powerful sermons, in a sense, that I'd ever seen in this country. And he asked, his name is, the author is one of the sort of, I think, one of the finest thinkers of, from the libertarian perspective in the United States. He has the questions clearly stated, and I encourage you to pick up the Boston Globe from last week and see how, in fact, one person has got a grip on what is happening to our country. What is happening to our country? Why are some children punished and others rewarded? Why, and this is the hard question, why do we hate the foreigner in our midst? Now, I know people will say, we don't hate the foreigner, we just don't want him here. I heard that when I was a child. Growing up in the south side of Chicago, the city was divided up into sections, and the sections were divided themselves, really, frankly, by hate. When I would, as a young child, I would ask the people in my home church, I'd ask them, why can't black people go live in our neighborhoods? Why can't they live, get jobs in our communities? And invariably, this was the answer. Oh, we don't hate anybody. We don't hate anybody. We just want to live with the people we like. We don't hate anybody. We just want to choose our own friends. We don't want to have it foisted upon us. We don't hate the foreigner in our midst. It just seems that way. As I was struggling with these questions this week, another issue came up that my wife had to remind me of what its meaning was. My sister was born in Germany. The end of the war, our father was a active, he was in the military, and he was a part of the Berlin airlift that brought food and clothing and shelter to the tens of thousands of people who lived in Berlin, who just, and this is one of the things I love about this country. We had just ended a war with the fascists, and what they had done was so cruel and despicable and unthinkable, what they had done. And now here we were, the day turned, and what was going on? The United States was dropping food and clothing for children. This was so important to who we understood ourselves to be, that no matter, even though we had just had a war with them. For us, for Americans at that time, no one said, we hate the foreigner in our midst. Instead, and you may remember if you were old enough, when I was in elementary school, what did we do on a regular basis? We brought packages in from home, from our homes, to send to the Red Cross, to send to the people that were starving in Berlin. This was the kind of people we were. It was understood. When I was a child and sitting in school, I remember one of my first primers, one of the stories was about a girl named Rosa. And Rosa, and the story was that Rosa was a new student, a new pupil in the school, and as a new pupil, she had to learn English. And all of the kids in the classroom would help Rosa learn English. So they would point at things. This is in the classroom now. They would point at things like this, and they'd say, microphone, 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 microphone. And it was extraordinary to see that my people, my American people, to them, this is what they thought was the right thing to do. It was essential. Did we hate the foreigner in our midst? Not then, but we seem to now. I had mentioned my sister. My sister was born in Berlin, was born in Frankfurt, and if the new red law goes through that was announced this past week, that if you had been born outside of the United States, you would lose your citizenship. This meant if you were a soldier, airman, seafarer, your children would be robbed of their citizenship, because the decision had been made by somebody in some part of the government that these people who were born in another country don't belong here. My sister would be among those because she was born abroad. What do we make of this situation? How do we square our faith in Jesus Christ with our public policy? That we reject people simply because the language they speak. Notice our second lesson in the bulletin. Second lesson, the writer to the Hebrews says this: let mutual love continue. Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers. Listen to that again. Do not neglect to show hospitality for strangers. For by doing that, some have entertained angels without knowing it. Remember those who are in prison as though you were in prison with them. Those who are being tortured as though you yourselves were being tortured. Keep your lives free from the love of money and be content with what you have. For God has said, I will never leave you. I will never leave you. I will never leave you or forsake you. Because of that, we can say with confidence, no matter what circumstances we're in, no matter what happens to us, we can say this: the Lord is my helper. I will not be afraid. What can anyone do to me? Amen.